Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Francine Foss. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and Dr. Foss is a Professor of Medical Oncology and Dermatology, specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, I'll be sitting in for Ed and Francine, and I'm joined by Maura Harrigan. Maura is a nutritionist for the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Clinic, and she joins me to talk about the role that nutrition plays in the prevention and treatment of cancer. So, Maura, how did you get interested in nutrition? I would imagine that you started with a nutrition background and then moved into survivorship, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's find out how you got interested just in the general topic of nutrition.
Well, I would have to credit my parents for that. Being raised in a very health-conscious home, both parents very athletic and good food-minded. So that was a natural fit for me. And then in terms of cancer, that was a bit of a turn in the road where one of my sisters developed breast cancer and passed away at a young age. So that kind of drew me to the field.
And now you're in the survivorship clinic at Yale. How did that come about?
Well, that was really an opportunity where the clinic came into existence because it was started by cancer survivors who recognized the need for this service for cancer survivors. Cancer patients are treated exceedingly well and tended to almost on a daily basis during their active treatment. And then once the active treatment stops, cancer survivors describe that as falling off a cliff. So the group of cancer survivors from the Connecticut Challenge raised the money, started this clinic, and said, we need this. And that's how the clinic came into existence. And I was contacted because in my private practice, I focus on wellness. And it was a just natural fit.
And we're told so much about this issue of wellness, but it's so hard to put in practice. I would imagine that once you've survived cancer treatment, that all of a sudden you're kind of looking at it with a new set of eyes.
That's so true. And that's one of the most rewarding parts of working in this field with cancer survivors, because they've come through such an ordeal and it changes their perspective on their life, on health, and how they approach self-care. So they come to me very open and wanting to make change. So it's, to me, one of those teachable moments. And you can make targeted changes and see the benefit. And they do truly benefit. So it's very rewarding.
And I remember a conversation I had one time with News 8's Dr. Mel, who's a multiple myeloma survivor. And this was actually fairly soon after his diagnosis and he had begun treatment. And he said something very interesting, very powerful to me that, you know, I said, you know, gosh, Mel, how are you doing? And he said, you know what? I wake up every morning and I treat every day as a gift. And that was amazing to me. Do you find that in the survivorship clinic?
I'm inspired by the people that come through the clinic, the survivors. The landscape changes for them, and they do come in with a different outlook on life. And they have, their priorities are in order, and they're looking to establish what we term in the clinic the new normal. So they're really reevaluating their lives and their lifestyles and their habits and their exercise and their nutrition, because they fought hard to get well. And now they come to the clinic and we help them, give them tools to help them stay well and have a roadmap going forward in wellness.
And how different is the conversation you're having with a cancer survivor about nutrition from someone who is not dealing with that?
Definitely the motivation of the person, that the cancer survivor, as I said, comes in open and motivated for change. And from a caregiver standpoint, that's very powerful. So it's actually quite easy to work with them.
Now, does it vary from based on what you've been treated for, or are these basic kind of tenets that all cancer survivors should be following?
Well, there are basic tenets. What's different is where the person is at and how they get there, how you help them get to that. So the basic tenets from the nutrition standpoint is that we look at a good visual is you imagine your dinner plate. And you want 2/3 of your dinner plate to be filled with foods from plant sources.
Mm.
So it's an interesting visual. And that the meat on the plate is a condiment.
Mm.
So that's a good visual to work with. And using that as a starting point, then you start getting to, well, how do I get there? And 2/3 plant-based means lots of whole grains, fruits, vegetables. And that's often right there a stumbling block for a lot of people. Like, well, how do I do that?
Because I would imagine that when, you know, and I think this is true for all of us, you know, food is something that we often use to relieve stress. And, you know, I can't think of anything more stressful than dealing with cancer. So that's got to be, you've obviously got someone who's motivated to do well, but you potentially are faced with taking away, you know, you've got the term comfort food. You know, you're taking away that coping mechanism in a way, or changing it.
I'm all for comfort foods, and I work around those. We work with comfort foods, and we build around them, because it's true. You can't take away the emotional component of eating, because that's so important. So chocolate to me is a food group.
Me too.
And how someone takes their first morning cup of coffee is sacred. You know, there are certain things you don't change. So what I try to do is target changes. When I sit down and talk with people, I identify areas in their eating that may be most problematic, and we focus on those and work and just kind of build and establish some good healthy habits, and not forsaking all the fun part.
And how long does it take, do you find? I've heard 30 days, if you're making a real change in your life, that it takes for it to really take. Is that about right?
Well, you're a fast worker. I'm going more with the 3-month plan.
No kidding.
In fact, we changed at the survivorship clinic. We have people come back for 3 visits once a month because to work with that process of that, it really takes a good 3 months to establish a new habit, break down an old one, build a new one.
So what's your process for working with someone? Would you have them, let's say let's take me through that first visit. What are you doing? Are you finding out what they're eating now?
Yes. When someone comes in, I do ask them if they have any pressing nutritional questions first. And some people come in just for a quick tune-up. You know, they have a real short list of questions that they've investigated. They want the answers. They give me a quick review of how they're eating. I give them my blessing, and they're happy and they're off. Some people come in really without any starting point, and they're at a loss. So at that point, I really do sit down and go through their day, how they eat throughout the day. And I get a good sense of then what do we keep, what do we add, what do we take away, and also what are they able and willing to do. It is a bit of a negotiation at times.
And perfect world, ideally, what would you say to have for breakfast? Keeping in mind that the cup of coffee is sacred.
After the sacred cup of coffee. Well, first, I'm so glad you even mentioned breakfast, because often that's the biggest omission in people's day. So getting people to eat breakfast is often one of the most powerful things they can do. So as simple as a quick bowl of high-fiber cereal with milk on it, throw a handful of blueberries, you are good to go. And that makes a huge difference in people's day. Because the biggest benefit I find from eating well for cancer survivors is that they feel better. It gives them better energy levels, and it helps manage the fatigue that is inherent from the cancer treatment. So that first and foremost, that sense of well-being, so that that breakfast meal gets that feeling going right away, and then we can build upon that.
How important is it to throw in some protein in that to that breakfast meal, some eggs or egg whites?
Protein is essential, and I encourage people to eat early, eat often, and always have a bit of protein at each meal and snack. So let's say that bowl of high-fiber cereal, if you put organic skim milk on that, the protein in the milk is a good source. Another alternative breakfast would be eggs, egg whites, even yogurts and fruits and granolas. Those are quick. Remember, people are trying to get out the door, get on with living. So try to make things quick, easy, fast, simple.
And what if they are a person who stops at, dare I say, a fast food restaurant or someplace where they're picking up something on their go? Is there a way to eat more healthfully when you do go to one of those establishments? Or are you pretty much out of luck?
Oh, Bruce. It's usually one of my personal tenets is avoid anything you purchase through a drive-through window.
Okay, so that's good. That's good to know.
Often, that gets people in trouble, that eating on the go and eating where you don't even get out of the car. That's often a fundamental habit that we start working on right away.
So that's something that's just that's great to take away from this, though, that I guess just putting it in your mind that this won't happen, you know, without some effort on your part, not only in making the decision to eat differently, but to, you know, shop for what you need and have it there and make it so you can prepare it, you know, quickly and so it works in with your schedule.
You are now an honorary dietitian.
Excellent.
That's really it. To eat well in this environment is very difficult. If you eat what's out there and available, readily available and convenient, it's high in fat, high in salt, high calories. It's very hard to manage your weight and have a nutritious diet. So to eat well in this environment, you do have to be very mindful and have to put thought into it and have a plan. And it is as basic as getting a good shopping list, having the food in your home environment so that you're surrounded with good choices and that you can grab these things with you as you head out. And that's exactly the bread and butter, so to speak, of what I do in the clinic, is help people just really very fundamental, basic day-to-day tools.
So now I've had my healthy breakfast, my whole grain cereal with some blueberries on it. What do you like for snacks? Because everybody likes that, you know, you get hungry between breakfast and lunch. What are healthy snacks?
Well, I'm glad you brought up snacking because that's important. My favorite snacks are a fruit and a nut. So a handful of nuts and a dried fruit is a great combination of a heart-healthy fat, a protein, and just enough carbohydrates. So it's a nice mix and gets your blood sugars stable.
And we're up to now breakfast and then the healthy snack. We're speaking with Maura Harrigan about nutrition and cancer, and we'll get to lunch, afternoon snack, and dinner when we come back. Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women. In Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year and nearly 200,000 nationwide. But there is new hope for these women. Earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies provide more options for patients to fight breast cancer. In 2010, more women are learning to live with this disease than ever before. Women should schedule a baseline mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as Yale Cancer Center, to make innovative new treatments available to patients. A potential breakthrough in treating chemotherapy-resistant breast cancer is now being studied at Yale, combining BSI-101, a PARP inhibitor, with the chemotherapy drug irinotecan. This has been a Medical Minute. brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network. Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. I'm Bruce Barber, joined by Maura Harrigan, who is a nutritionist for the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Clinic at Yale Cancer Center. And we're talking about nutrition for cancer survivors. And we got up through breakfast and mid-morning snack. Let's continue our day now. What's a great lunch?
A great lunch is, first of all, one where you can incorporate a bit of an outside walk so that you get in some exercise. And again, that's what we encourage at the clinic. There's also a physical therapist who talks about exercise component. But lunchtime is a great time to remove yourself from the work environment or your home environment, wherever you are, get outside, take a nice walk, and incorporate that into your lunch routine. I do promote brown bagging lunch. Again, it's cost effective, and you have more control over what you're eating. And again, keeping it simple, whole grain breads, simple sandwiches, working in tuna fish, even peanut butter. We really keep it simple. We want to limit red meat and to about once a month. That's often bad news, sad news for a lot of people. And really avoid processed meats. So lunchtime can be tricky for people in terms of luncheon meats. That's really a food group that we strongly encourage to be avoided.
Your guest dietitian likes the boar's head chicken breast. Is that a good one?
Excellent choice.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear it. With a little mustard on the whole wheat bread. Is there a difference in whole wheat breads?
Well, there's a difference in the amount of fiber, and the more fiber, the better. And the way you find that out is when you're purchasing bread, you look on the food label, and you look for where the grams of fiber is listed. And 3 grams or more is considered a high-fiber food.
Per serving?
Serving, okay. Yes. Those numbers are listed per serving, and that applies to cereals also.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about a mid-afternoon snack?
Well, I did want to add some vegetables and fruit
at lunch. Oh, okay, yeah. Let's not jump to the snack before we finished our lunch. That's a good point.
We're trying to work in fruits and vegetables here.
Okay, good.
So a nice way to work in vegetables is tomato juice.
Okay.
That's a nice way. Always adding fruit to lunch, lettuce and tomato to the sandwich. So that about covers lunch.
Okay. And, not to continue to toot my own horn, if you will, but I like to, you know what I find very good, because I've been trying to work in more fruits and vegetables, just taking those little carrots, and I even cut them up a little more, and just a little pepper on them also to give them a little flavor.
That's an excellent, excellent suggestion.
I'm getting such good grades here. Okay, let's move on to the mid-afternoon snack now.
Well, we could use those carrots that you just described.
Okay. If I could hold off at lunch and save them for the snack.
Or bring a little extra.
Okay.
That afternoon snack seems to me to be essential because it's a natural low-energy time for people. And if you skip that snack, you set yourself up for being, particularly for survivors, for worsening fatigue in the afternoon and also setting the stage for overeating at dinner. You tend just to be too hot, too tired, too hungry. So that late afternoon snack is essential. I like vegetables, hummus, cheeses, even cheeses that you buy in the store, the Bombell cheeses, the Laughing Cow wedges, things that are portable. Again, throw it in your briefcase, in your purse, and you can carry those with you. And the cut-up vegetables, as you described. Those are excellent suggestions.
And then dinner. That's, I think a lot of times in our culture, people go for that big dinner. It's right, soon before we're going to go to bed, and that's generally advised against.
That's true. Eating early and often through the day enables you to eat less at night because you're not under fueling during the day so that you're at this deficit where your body's just saying, I am so hungry, please feed me. And that underfueling during the day and the largest meal of your day in the evening is a recipe for weight gain. And that's one of the goals in cancer survivorship is to for weight maintenance and preventing weight gain. So fueling early and often. There's an old adage, breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, dinner like a pauper, and that still holds true. So by having those important snacks during the day, the goal is to have dinner really be your smallest meal.
Mm.
And that's often a big reversal for people.
And then how soon before bed do you want to make sure you haven't had anything to eat? Like, is there a period of time where you want to make sure you haven't eaten anything at a certain time?
Yes, I often negotiate that with people.
Mm-hmm.
At least an hour, ideally two or three. It depends. Many cancer survivors do suffer from gastric reflux.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an important management tool, is not to eat close to lying down before bedtime. So there I'd like to see 3 hours where they're not consuming foods, and that lessens the symptoms of reflux at night.
How about alcohol? What are you telling cancer survivors about the, you know, someone who loves to have that glass of wine with dinner or a beer when they get home?
Well, the benefits of alcohol have been shown for cardiovascular health, not necessarily for cancer prevention. But cancer survivors do need to be concerned about their cardiovascular health. So the alcohol does play a protective role there, but it's the amount. So moderate drinking is one drink a day for women and two for men. And also that alcohol is the same whether it's a 5-ounce glass of wine, a 12-ounce bottle of beer, or a shot of good scotch. That alcohol content is all the same.
Now, we've already mentioned fast food as being something to avoid. Are there other types of foods that I might even find in the supermarket that if I'm a cancer survivor, I really want to stay away from?
Yes. Look at the ingredient list. And if it reads like a chemistry textbook, that's not a food you want to choose.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping the ingredients list short and keeping foods real and, as I say, close to the ground, those are the foods you want to choose. So highly processed foods are really foods that you want to avoid.
How about supplements? What are things that cancer survivors should think about in that regard? Because that seems it just like a dizzying array of possibilities.
It is dizzying, even to me. It's interesting, over 70% of cancer survivors take supplements just on their own. And supplements are actually not recommended, except for a few. I'd like to get to that. But American Cancer Society, the World Health Organization, the message is get your nutrients through whole foods, not supplements. Do not rely upon supplements for your nutrients. Now, the ones that are good are calcium, of course, with vitamin D, because, again, cancer survivors do need to monitor their bone health. That's one of the late effects of treatments. So particularly women with their calcium supplements with vitamin D. And omega-3 fatty acids are proving to be important, mostly because we've almost wiped it out of our food supply. So we're just replacing omega-3s back into our diet. But what's most important is before you take any supplement, talk about it with your physician. Particularly during active treatment, these supplements can directly interfere with the chemotherapy agents that are being used. So during active treatment, really, supplements are highly discouraged. And then in the survivorship phase and in the clinic, it tends to be a negotiation too. First, do no harm. So I really look at people's report of their supplement use and very carefully. Because another aspect that people don't realize is when they take multiple formulas, that they're getting duplicate versions of, let's say, vitamin A. And that adds up pretty quickly. And there are upper limits of safety. So that's one thing I look for.
Now, I would imagine that it's very important that for a cancer survivor that the whole family be involved in this. Is that something that you stress also?
Yes. And it depends on the role of the cancer survivor, what their role is in the family in terms of food. So if it's the person who is the primary cook and food shopper, they may not feel up to that task because of the fatigue. Mm. So that may be something that again, renegotiating that with the family, saying, you know, I used to do this, but I can't do it anymore because my energy needs to be spent elsewhere. So it is important to evaluate in where the survivor is in terms of the family and in terms of their role in food preparation, shopping. And another aspect is if there's children in the home. I often discuss with survivors their concern about their children's eating and that they're teaching them good nutrition habits that will help their children avoid cancer in the future. And that becomes a big focus and concern for the parents. So oftentimes we'll focus on the children's eating, and then that sets the groundwork for the whole family eating well.
And that's really the perfect way to lead into my next question, which is the role of good nutrition in cancer prevention.
Yes, the research is showing that at least 30% of cancers can be prevented through good nutrition and exercise. Remember, it always goes hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
One, you can't have one without the other. So it is a vital role in cancer prevention.
And talk a little about the research that's being done with research studies and just ongoing projects that you're involved with.
Well, I'm fortunate to be involved in two very exciting studies. One is called the WALK study, which is for women who've been treated for ovarian cancer. It's one of the first research studies for women who've been treated for ovarian cancer. And it's an exercise study that looks at the effect of exercise on quality of life and also certain hormones in the blood for women who've been treated for ovarian cancer. And another study is called the HOPE study, which is for women who've been treated for breast cancer who are receiving aromatase inhibitor therapy. And those medications are very powerful, but they tend to carry some strong side effects for certain women to the point where the women don't want to take the medication anymore. So this study is aimed for those women, and again, using exercise to see if it mitigates some of the side effects of the aromatase inhibitors to help them stay on the medication and reap the benefits of the medication.
Is this all pretty new?
It's very new, and it's exciting, and the research team is thrilled to be doing this. And when we contact women to participate in the study, every woman is happy to jump on board.
Because probably it's not just that they're gaining the benefit, but it's just the knowledge also of the fact that it's benefiting future survivors.
Yes, and that's something I hear from cancer survivors. They want to give back to the community to help future survivors, and it's very powerful.
Now, you mentioned before, and it's great. I could just tell the way you were energized when you started to talk about the people you work with. That must be the real joy of what you do.
In terms of the patients, it's an honor. And as I said, cancer survivors have gone through a life-changing experience, and they bring to me this wisdom and that I learn from every day.
And going forward, what is the most exciting thing you see on the horizon in the field of nutrition and cancer?
Well, targeted therapies. Treatment gets more and more targeted towards the specific cancer, the subtypes of cancers, and that we can also target foods to address that.
Maura Harrigan is a nutritionist for the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Clinic at Yale Cancer Center. If you have questions or would like to share your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.